Hi everyone and welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast with me, your host, Justin Chisholm. In this bumper episode, we've got three great interviews from the world of professional yacht racing. First up is British solo skipper Will Harris, who recently announced he secured a sponsorship deal with British clean energy company Hive Energy to compete on the French-dominated Figaro circuit in 2019. Next on the show is a fascinating chat with the Emirates Team New Zealand sailor and coach Ray Davis about the current state of play as the current America's Cup holders prepare to defend the Cup in Auckland in 2021. And then, staying with the America's Cup theme, we talk to young American sailors Taylor Canfield and Mike Buckley, the co-founders of Stars and Stripes Team USA, the second American campaign to challenge for the 36th America's Cup. So without any further ado, let's get straight into the show with the first interview. Volvo Ocean Race fans may recognise the name Will Harris as one of the team of race experts who kept them updated with the latest info on the fleet from the control room at Race HQ in Alicante. But Will is also a very accomplished sailor and navigator in his own right. I began our chat, which took place in mid-December, by asking him to talk us through his route into professional sailing.
So I originally came from the RAA Youth Development Programme, which effectively tried to get young sailors into the Olympic classes. So I came through all the Optimist, the Laser, the 29er and all those sort of boats. It really wasn't until I went to university back in 2012 when I went to Southampton University, where I got involved in the solo offshore sailing circuit through the Artemis Offshore Academy. They basically put me through a brutal 3-day trials to kind of put you in the experience and mimic what sort of solo offshore sailing's like. And I absolutely loved it. 3 days of hell and challenges, and it was really good fun. And so I got straight into that in my second year of university. Now, with the aim of the Artemis Offshore Academy was putting sailors through through the Figaro racing circuit. It's kind of the testing ground, the breeding ground of sort of solo offshore sailing legends, based mostly around France. So once I actually finished university, I went and did the La Solitaire de Figaro and the Championnat de France, which is kind of the big French racing circuit and sort of the unofficial world championships of sailing. So I suppose that's where my background's come from, originally the RAA Youth Development Programme.
So you started in dinghies and then made this kind of almost sudden transition into offshore racing. What was it about that 3 days of what you said brutal, you know, being treated brutally? What was it that appealed to you about it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it was quite a big leap, I suppose, quite a big change. You're going from racing 30 minutes in a small skiff to racing 3 or 4 days at a time, where you don't really get much time to sleep at all. But it was having the opportunity in the first place that I think really got me into it. You know, there's not many opportunities out there for young sailors to get into the solo offshore sailing circuit. And so being given the opportunity to sail a boat like this and actually, you know, challenge yourself in this way by kind of going offshore, dealing with sort of harsh conditions than what you find in dinghy racing was really what kind of inspired me to get stuck into it. And you know, try and help develop kind of British youth talent in solo offshore sailing.
And for me, offshore sailing, offshore sailors have a particular kind of way about them in that they because they have to be self-sufficient, they have to be comfortable with being on their own in quite difficult conditions and situations. Is that something you see in yourself?
Yeah, almost certainly I do. I've done several solo races now and as well as crewed races, and you can really tell the difference between when you've done some solo sailing on a boat and when you haven't. When you're solo sailing, you've got to do every position on the boat. You've got to be the bowman, you've got to be the navigator, the tactician, you've got to steer the thing as well. As well as manage everything on board, or being able to fix everything on the boat is very important. So you find that when you get into a crewed role, you struggle to stick to one position because you feel like you need to do everything. But it's Yeah, no, it's really good way of developing your offshore sailing as a whole to be able to fill any role. You know, when you're offshore sailing, you never know what challenge you might face. You know, you're always struggling with breakages and stuff that you have to fix on the water and doing all the different roles on the boat. So it's by doing solo offshore sailing, it's really developed me as an offshore sailor as a whole.
I can imagine. Now you've just spent 9 months on one of the biggest of sailing's races, the Volvo Ocean Race, the 2017-18 edition. But you weren't sailing then; you were
Yes.
involved at the race HQ. Just talk a little bit about that role.
Yeah, exactly. So after I did my year in the solitaire de Figaro in the solo offshore sailing, I used my navigation skills that I'd developed when racing the circuit, and I took that to the Volvo Ocean Race to work as a race expert. Now our role at Race HQ is basically to monitor and provide support for the seven yachts in the Volvo Ocean Race racing around the world. So 24/7, there'd be four of us doing a watch system for each of the legs, which could be up to 3 weeks in time. And our roles was kind of to analyze the racing as itself, so that we could explain to the public exactly what's going on in the racing, why one boat might have chosen a weather route and a path than the rest of the fleet. But primarily our role was safety, and you know, through all our understandings of and our experience of being offshore ourselves, we could then use that as transferable skills to be able to provide the support for the seven Volvo Ocean Race boats as they had problems during the race. And it was a very, very interesting race to develop. We saw how close it came down to at the finish. So from where I was sat in race control with the data from all the different boats coming into me, it was a very good analysis position to be in, and that's what's really important in offshore sailing. You know, those marginal fractional gains, especially in one design classes like the Figaro and like the Volvo 65s.
It must have been a fascinating role, but were you also kind of wishing you were out there as well?
Yes, yeah, you know, there's always that aspect. When you're a sailor, when especially offshore sailing, it really gets stuck into you. And being sat watching these boats sail around the world was hard for me at times, for sure. So I'm really, really glad that I've come back, and I've done several races now, and I'm looking forward to getting back into some more racing. Although I do feel like I've picked up a lot of skills from working at race control. You learn so much from experiencing what all of the seven boats did around the world. You know, we dealt with every single problem they had. So to me myself, that's developed a good level of experience in offshore sailing through that.
Now, just before we come on to your big news, you have been doing some racing since the Volvo Ocean Race. Tell us about that, because you've had some success, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, exactly. So I've had a bit of a couple of races this year, a bit of time to do some racing, and I competed in the Rorke 7-star Round Britain Island race on board Paternegro, which is skippered by Giles Redpath, and it's a Lombard 46, and we won the Round Britain Island overall after 9.5 days of racing in some quite challenging conditions. You know, sailing up the western side of Scotland, we had some big depressions and some big seas coming down. So really happy to have finished the race, let alone win the whole event. As well as that, I did the double-handed Rorke IRC National Championships on board Redshift with Ed Fishwick, and that was and we actually won that race as well. So yeah, no, in the two races that I've come back and done with Rorke, it's been quite a bit of success. So I'm re really happy with, you know, I've managed to achieve a couple of races, even though I've been working at race control and kind of been away from the water for the last 10 or 11 months.
And those two campaigns, you're in a navigator's role?
Yes, yeah, exactly. I've always done that navigation on board. It proved quite a challenging one for the Round Britain Island. We had a lot of times with trying to avoid big weather systems. A lot of the fleet ending up in sort of 40 or 50 knots of wind, at the same time as big high pressures coming down through the North Sea, which was really tricky to get through. And it was quite a hard, long fight to the finish to make sure we stayed ahead of the rest of the fleet and on handicap. But that went really well. And then during the IRC double-handed national championships, that was much more inshore and coastal racing. We had one coastal race to Cherbourg. But the inland round the Cairns kind of racing really was where I got to put my solo sailing skills to the test, I suppose, and see how quickly you can hoist a spinnaker and get around the Cairns, and you know how good you are at actually being able to manage a boat when there's only two of you on it.
So two successes. They say good news comes in threes. So you have, we've teased it enough now, you have some news for us. Tell us about the big news for you for next year.
Yeah, so the exciting news for me is that I'm going to be competing in the French offshore sailing circuit, the Championship de France, in the all-new Figaro 3 three boat, supported by Hive Energy. So Hive Energy is second largest solar park developer in the UK. They've developed over 26 sites now in the UK in the last 5 years alone, and they'll be supporting me through my coming year. And hopefully in the future, as I build up, and ideally in the end, work up towards the Vendée Globe.
So there's a link, isn't there, between your sponsor Hive Energy and your Round Britain and Ireland campaign?
Yes, exactly. So back when I did the 7-star Round Britain and Ireland, the boat's skippered and owned by Giles Redpath, who is actually at the head of Hive Energy as well. So as part of the season next year, the Championship de France will consist of sort of the big races, La Solitaire de Figaro, but it also consists of two double-handed races, and I'm intending to race these double-handed with Giles. You know, we've proved we've had a bit of success in the Round Britain Island, him as skipper and me as navigator, and we've proved that we work well together. So I'm looking forward to doing some double-handed races with him next year in this exciting new Figaro 3 boat.
And it is, that's fantastic news. Congratulations on that. And you say this exciting new Figaro boat, it is very new. I don't think any boats have actually been delivered to any of the skippers yet. It's going to be a foiling boat. People may have heard a little bit about it, but just talk us through this boat. What's different about it?
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to have this opportunity from Hive Energy. It's going to be a really exciting year, and especially, like you say, in the Figaro 3, you know, super, like as a standard with all Figaro boats, they've always been really one design. And instead of these, the water ballast that the Figaro 2s had, this is the boat that the Figaro 3 will be replacing. They've got these new L-shaped foils sticking out either side of the boat. Now, in the IMOCA 60s, you'll tend to see the foils sticking out the side and pointing up. But this time in the Figaro 3, they'll be pointing down into the water to help produce more righting moment. But for 2019, with the Figaro 2s, they've been in play for sort of nearly 20 years now. With the Figaro 3, it's going to offer a whole new level playing field. You know, everyone's going to receive their boats in January 2019, almost exactly the same time. So everyone's going to have the exact same training for the year. And it will just be a real opportunity for hopefully younger guys like myself to really test the French and all the guys who have sat at the top of the Figaro 2 fleet, because they've had so much experience in the boat. Because the boat's all new, it will be a much more level playing field.
So how does this work now? You get your boat in January, and then I guess you need to start to learn how to sail it, learn all about it, because it's going to be brand new to you.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So the Figaro 3s will arrive end of January. Now the season will consist, will be based around the Championnat de France, and that's basically the elite offshore sailing series. So there's five races in that. There's two double-handed and there's three solo. Now, the main race of the year is the La Solitaire, ergo Le Figaro. It's kind of seen as the solo unofficial world championships of sailing. You know, a month long of racing with four stages, kind of a Tour de France style ranking. So say you win the first leg by 3 hours, you'll get to keep that 3 hours going into the next leg. And you know, most legs will finish, the entire 40 boat fleet will finish within 2 or 3 hours themselves. So it's all super close racing because of the one design.
That sounds Sounds absolutely thrilling. And so when will you start sailing the boat?
So my intention is to head out to France and start training in the boat by the end of January. We've got approximately 8 weeks until the start of the first race, which is a double-handed race called the Sardinia Cup down to Lisbon. So I'm intending to do that with Giles from Hive Energy. So it'll be a race down to Lisbon and then back from there. So it's quite an exciting sort of baptism of fire for the entire 50-boat fleet. You know, everyone will have had 6 to 8 weeks training, learning a new boat with foils, with asymmetric spinnakers. So I think that will be a really exciting race to do to get the season started off.
And there's some big names, aren't there, associated with this class now? I mean, it's what they describe as the proving ground for solo skippers, for ocean racing skippers going forward. And I know your aspiration is to one day be a Vendée Globe skipper. So this is almost part of the apprenticeship, isn't it?
You're exactly right. In the last sort of eight editions of the Vendée Globe, I think every single winner has also won the Solitaire du Figaro, which is the big event of my season next year. So it really is a proving ground. If you can prove yourself in the Figaro class, then you're hopefully going to work up towards greater things in the IMOCA class and in the Vendée Globe eventually, yes.
So to round off a very exciting season for you, if that wasn't enough with two victories and a new sponsorship and campaign for next year, you're also going to be taking part in one of sailing's most classic yacht races, the Sydney Hobart. What's that all about?
Yes, no, exactly right. So I'm going to be doing the Sydney Hobart race on a TP52 called Envy Scooters. So the race will start on the 26th of December, Boxing Day, as it always does. So it'll be and I'll be doing navigation on that. It's a part of the world that I've never sailed in, but I'm really looking forward to sailing with the guys. It's a full Australian crew. I'll be the only English sailor on board. So I think that'll be a really interesting mix, and it's a race that I've really been looking forward to tick off my bucket list, and one that I can say that I've navigated for.
Sounds like it might be a bit wet.
Generally TP52s are quite wet boats, and that time of year down in the down towards the Southern Ocean area, you can get some pretty interesting sea states and wind conditions down through the Bass Strait. It's often a race that's upwind and sort of 25, 30 knots of wind. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Australia will throw at us. No, I'm really looking forward to it.
And in a race like that, as navigator, are you confined to the navigation role, or do you get to dual purpose a bit and do some sailing?
I think that's the important thing to find. As I'm kind of a solo sailing breed of sailor, like I said, it's tricky to come back into the one role position when you do sail with a crew. But I think that's really important to define. My role on board will be navigator, and that's quite an important role, in deciding where the boat goes, and also for safety reasons. So for sure, I'll help out as much as I can on the boat, but my main focus will be navigating them safely, and hopefully in a good position to the finish.
Well, it sounds like a fantastic way to round out a great season for you, a great year for you, and launch you off into the campaign next year. Congratulations on all of it. Congratulations on the campaign for next year. We'll be watching very closely. And thanks for talking to us.
Yes, no, thank you very much. And as part of the project next year, we're always looking for partners to come on board with the campaign for next year with Hive Energy. It's not exclusive, and we've got some really turnkey opportunities for any potential sponsors.
And how might they contact you? What email address will be good, or what website address?
You can always contact me through my website, willhsailing.com, and it's the same thing on all social media channels, Will Harris Sailing, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. So please get in contact with me.
Next up on the Yacht Racing Podcast, I speak to Ray Davis, one of professional sailing's most likeable and highly regarded protagonists. Davis has been living and breathing the America's Cup for the last 20 years or more. He was tactician aboard the Kiwi Foiling Cat in San Francisco when Emirates Team New Zealand got within a hair's breadth of snatching the cup away from the Americans. Then, in Bermuda in 2016, he was a reserve helmsman and coach when the Kiwis finally emerged victorious and took the cup back to New Zealand. Now for the 36th America's Cup, Davis is front and centre once again as Emirates Team New Zealand prepare to try and defend the cup, racing in a new generation of radical foiling multi-hulls. I began our interview by asking Ray to comment on the dramatic changes he's witnessed in the America's Cup since his first involvement way back in the year 2000.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a huge transformation. We feel pretty lucky, our generation, to have seen the evolution of the America's Cup and sailing in general. We've seen some absolutely incredible transformations. And yes, certainly my first America's Cup was back in 2001. And first was with America One, actually, just coming in at the end of that campaign. But back in those days, the AC... the version 5 boats, we were fighting for a couple of tenths of a knot of performance, where now we're literally fighting for knots of performance. So, and obviously we're flying, so the whole world's changed as far as America's Cup's concerned.
Could you have ever imagined back then that sailing monohulls as you were then, that there would be flying monohulls at some point in the America's Cup?
That's a really good question. In the early stages, no, but... as soon as the America's Cup went to multi-hulls, straight away a few of us could visualise the future there and could see where it was heading. As soon as we went to performance and the rules started opening up a bit, I certainly could see the future of where we've become and where it's evolved to. But it's been exciting to see that vision a reality now.
Now, in the 34th Cup in San Francisco, you were tactician on the Kiwi boat. And then in the last Cup, the 35th Cup, you took on a kind of supporting role. So let's just start, just kind of position that. What was your role for the last Cup in Bermuda?
Oh, yeah, the last Cup in Bermuda. Well, certainly through all the testing and development early stages, I was helming the boat back in New Zealand. Pete and Blair had their Olympic campaign in full flight. So, pretty much Glenn Ashby, myself, and a couple of others were, Richard Meacham were the test pilots on the whole foiling concept. So, I did a hell of a lot of helming of this, foiling cat in the early days and did the first foiling tacks and all that side of things. So, a lot of helming. And then the boys freed up from their Olympic commitment. So I slotted into more of a coaching supportive role, working with the performance guys and analysing various characteristics, and then the boat just kept evolving from there and we just kept getting faster and faster. So the first half of the last campaign I was doing a lot of sailing and sailed on all the 45 events, but more and more it's become more of a performance, working close with the design team, and this whole new concept of boat has been my main focus since then.
Was it hard for you to take that step back, having, I think you were actually the kind of reserve helmsman for the boat as well for the last Cup, even though people think you were in a kind of, in a supporting role.
I did have that title. Who knows what would have happened? there was that responsibility, but we fully committed to giving Pete and the guys as much time as possible. So pretty much when their commitments freed up from the Olympics, they sailed the boat every day since then. My philosophy is about winning the America's Cup. It's not about me. So I was able to adjust to the change in responsibility. I've always just wanted to be on a winning team and be part of that. Was a bigger driver than my own, change in position in the team. So, for sure it's a hard transition. I'm not saying that was easy. There's a lot of people would opt out of the America's Cup if that meant they were not going to be racing anymore. We're all driven, motivated competitors on the water. And it is a transition, but the way this America's Cup has evolved into an extremely exciting class and concept of boat, there's enough reward in being involved in many aspects of an America's Cup team now.
So tell us now about your role for this cup, whereas you guys are trying to defend the America's Cup on home waters. What's the function for Ray Davis?
Yeah, look, my main goal is still understanding this concept of boat that we've come up with. We've got a very advanced simulator, so I spend most of my time on that simulator, going through various board configurations and rudders and all sorts of sail configurations and trying to understand the intricacies of this new design. And we could be spending a hell of a lot of money on the water with a real boat, but we've opted to go down a path of trusting our simulator. It's quite a different path to what other teams have done. We did a combination in the last cup, and it was incredible how valuable the simulator was for us. So we've headed down that path again. So my day-to-day is basically time on the simulator and time immersed in the design team, giving feedback from a sailor's perspective.
So let me just check that I'm understanding this right. So when you say time on the simulator, you're physically sailing the simulator. You're not just looking at a computer screen.
Yeah, that's right. It's set up as in we think the boat would be. It's not a full-size boat, but it has all the features of the boat. Obviously, a scale down, it's in a room, it's not, it doesn't take up a huge amount of space. But, physically sailing that boat, helming that boat. Again, Pete and Blair have a lot of commitments in doing the Olympics again and keeping them fresh as sailors, on the water. So that we'll share the responsibility of sailing the simulator between Pete and Blair, Josh and Andy, who are all doing Olympic campaigns, and myself and Glenn. So, it does take a lot of time and a lot of hours drafting it out in the simulator room, but at least we know the conditions are consistent.
Tell us what it's like to be on the simulator. What does it feel like? Can you describe it? I know you probably can't give too much away.
Oh, yeah, it's an evolving thing. We're trying to make it as real as possible, but it's just another tool that, we've found it good for us within the mix of people that we have and getting good chat going with the designers. But it's just another tool, and, we have to prove it all on the water. So it's not the be all and end all of our campaign, but, certainly it's the focus at the moment from day-to-day operations.
So aside from the simulator, can you describe what a typical day for Ray Davis is like from when you get up and have your first cup of coffee in the morning?
Yeah, I tend to meet Glenn or Pete and Blair or Dick, Richard Meacham, for a cup of coffee in the morning, chat about priorities of the day and priorities coming up, and then pretty much the schedule of meetings during the week, consistent meetings with the various departments, whether it's oils or rig sail, input devices. There's a lot of different areas within an America's Cup team that we're all part of. So, pretty much day to day, just getting through meetings and then trying to execute the plan out of those meetings. So, very much design, office time related at the moment, but trying to keep on the water with my moth and a foiling windsurfer too now to try to actually keep on the water and keep sailing.
Wow, that sounds great. So it sounds like the funnest part will be the time on the water and the time on the simulator.
Living the dream, mate, living the dream.
So listen, tell us a bit about the team now. How many people is it? How's it structured? What's the kind of the big picture structure of the whole thing?
Yeah, look, we're building the boat now as all the teams are embarking on. A change for us this time around is we have our own build facility. So we have had to get that up and running from scratch, from a bare bones building. And now that's a fully operational, state-of-the-art boat building facility with incredible guys that we've been able to handpick. So we've got about 35 specialist boat builders out there. And then on the design side of things, back at our main base in Auckland City, there's about another 35 people working on everything from admin to, you know, making sure we have an amazing event here in Auckland, and just keeping the wheels rolling and the plans coming out to feed to the design build, the build process.
Is there a different atmosphere around the team now that you're America's Cup holders rather than challengers?
Oh, yes and no. Not really. Look, the day-to-day is the same. We're trying to host an amazing event here, and there's a lot of infrastructure, but we've outsourced that to another department, so we're trying to keep that as separate as possible so we can just focus on racing and getting this new concept boat going as quick as possible. But sure, there's a added responsibility, but we've tried to set it up so that's not as least amount of a distraction as possible.
I do know you've got some lovely offices down there. I was lucky enough to use the media center in those in that facility during the Volvo Ocean Race stop over there. So it must be nice, must be a pleasure after the kind of cramped facilities you had prior to that. Are you guys enjoying that upgrade, and how do you manage to maintain that kind of team tough ethos that Grant's so keen on?
Oh, look, it's a good question, and it's a real reality. We've been incredibly fortunate to have acquired the most amazing America's Cup base of all time so far. And no, it's really an amazing building that we're in, and we're redesigning it to be specific for an America's Cup campaign. Incredibly fortunate how that all unfolded. Obviously a lot of space, a lot of perfect rooms, but we do really have to remember where we've come from and how we made it work last time with a nice tight setup. So we're trying to make sure we keep as many of those lessons learnt from last time and not let it get to our heads, and you know, keep it all in check.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. Now, you touched on the point earlier that you know, you guys are using the simulator and you're not going to build a surrogate boat, as we've seen with some of the other challenges. Can you just kind of talk us through the thinking behind that? I mean, I know obviously the simulator worked well for you last time, but would there not be a case for building a full-size boat this time, just as the others have?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question that all the teams faced at the beginning. A lot of teams had to really try and learn about this concept of boat and how it works. We felt we got that understanding through the simulator. And then when you look at the schedule, everyone's building their boat one already. So a lot of the decisions that had to be learnt on the water had to have been made months ago for it to actually translate into your boat one. And we felt with our build, our timeline on all the things we had going on, we had learnt enough of the lessons already on the simulator to feed into boat one. So that was our philosophy. We just felt we were going to run out of time to get valuable learnings on the water that would actually really feed into the initial design. But, you know, it's been fantastic to see these other teams actually out there ripping around in the concept. And it's very reassuring for us that our tools have been accurate to date.
Yeah, it must be real. I heard you guys mention that, you know, in other interviews that you were kind of reassured when you saw these surrogate boats actually up on foils and flying, just kind of reassures you that the whole thing works, right?
Well, certainly from a sailor's perspective, you know, the boffins and the team were feeling a lot more confident than us humble sailors, where we just like to touch and feel these things. So from the majority of the audience out there that get to listen to this podcast, absolutely, you want to see and touch and feel these things in reality. But it's amazing for the boffins and the engineers who never actually sail on the boats anyway. They just understand the physics. So it's quite a couple of different worlds that come together in an America's Cup campaign. And, certainly from any sailor, you're never going to trust just numbers because you don't understand it to start with. And, you know, we're all about actually feeling that wind in our face. So, for sure, we're really looking forward to launching our boat one and actually getting on the water.
Now, I remember speaking to Glenn Ashby after the cut last time, and in the middle of that interview, he talked about the innovation that Emirates Team New Zealand had driven in their campaign. And he described it was something like, you know, we took the ball and we threw it as far as we could, and then try to reach it, you know, when it came to innovation. Is that still the ethos within the team?
I think we've seen that in this design of boat. For sure, we've thrown it out there. The America's Cup, as far as we're concerned, it ties up all the best designers in the world. So we think part of the philosophy is let's keep pushing the boundaries. It's an amazing, exciting sport now. And we've seen amazing things from San Francisco and Bermuda, that these boats are incredibly exciting, and we wanted that to continue. And, you know, we feel this concept of boat nails it on all fronts. And we've had amazing feedback from the other teams that this concept is incredibly difficult, incredibly challenging, but amazing rewards when you get it right, and very exciting. So I think that really fits the bill for our vision for the America's Cup.
Now, there's been lots of positives out of the stuff we've seen from the other teams, the boats flying comfortably on foils and that sort of stuff. One of the negatives, I guess, has been some reports about problems, rumours. I don't know whether they are rumours or whether they're confirmed with the boards and the foiling systems. Can you shine any light on that or give any kind of clarification on that?
Yeah, I can do. Look, there has been some problems with the foil arms themselves. We can rewind a little bit, and this whole design, there's a few one design components that had to be built. So we decided to split a bit of the responsibilities of these components. Like Team New Zealand, we took on the foil cant system, so the actual mechanics of moving the arm up and down. And that seems to have gone quite well. We've had positive feedback from the teams. Yeah, Luna Rosa were in charge of the design of the foil arm itself, and then we tested those foil arms, and then they did actually fail below the design spec. So there's been quite a setback in that interest in the foil arm. So then all the teams got together and had a series of meetings on what is going to be the best design going forward for that foil arm. So the Team New Zealand engineers have sort of front-footed that, and we've come up with a new design. So we've binned the old design, and all of the teams now agree on this new structure and build method. So it has set us back for sure a few months. And you know, breaking foils in the America's Cup, it's not new to the America's Cup. We did it in the last campaign. Yeah, we are pushing the boundaries on all of these items. So it was a setback, but not a major. You know, we can overcome it. But, you know, the other thing that's happened now, we've got a couple more teams come online, so there could be a couple of flow-on effects as far as the scheduling's concerned for next year. But, you know, we're working hard to make sure we make the right decisions and that, you know, the boats and the teams can be ready to race, you know, safely. We get to make sure that the teams have time to, you know, get to grips with this new concept of boat and the 11 crews, a lot of crew, and certainly we're going to be pushing these boats blooming hard. So, yeah, look, you know, the rumours are correct. There was a setback there, and we're working on getting through that. And the new boards are under construction now.
So I guess better to be breaking them now than breaking them once the racing starts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, that, you know, this does happen when you push the boundaries on design. If you don't push the boundaries, the boats are slow. And yep, there has been an issue, but you know, it's been resolved, and we'll see how the next 12 months plays out.
Now, right, just to deviate slightly from the America's Cup, one team that's not going to be competing this time around is Oracle Team USA, who you guys beat in the final last time. And we've seen from that kind of campaign, we've seen the launch of Sail GP, which is another global circuit. It's another foiling boats. It's kind of the boats from the last cup, supercharged. What are your thoughts on that? You must have a view on how that's all playing out.
Yeah, I think it's great. It's fantastic. Good on Coates and Larry Ellison for, you know, pushing the sport in this direction and really supporting, you know, this type of sailing, innovation and technology. You know, we really, it doesn't affect the America's Cup. We've got enough entries, and it almost, you know, supports this whole type of boat and speed. So, you know, good on them for doing it, and good on Larry for, you know, putting his money where his mouth is. But, you know, really it doesn't affect us at all. The Miracles Cup's always going to be the pinnacle, and, yeah, good on them.
Fantastic. Now, let's talk a little bit as we close this up about the teams that you guys could have to face in the final. We've now got five challengers as we speak right now. There's a few more being vetted in the wings, but I won't push you on that because I know you can't talk about that. But can you talk a little bit about perhaps the two new teams that arrived, the Malta team and the second American team, which is Stars and Stripes with Taylor Canfield and Mike Buckley. What are your thoughts on those two teams?
Yeah, very exciting. It's pretty obvious for us. We really want this to be an amazing event. It's great to get the numbers up. And, yeah, we're working through all the details with those guys, but it looks like both of those teams will get one of our Boat One design, and we'll work pretty closely with them to make sure that they're on the start line with a good boat. And we're just working through the details on how all of that transpires, but no, it's very exciting to have these guys in the cup now, and the design teams, you know, they both have their own design teams as well, so it's not like it's just a mirror version of Team New Zealand. They're going to develop their own boats as well, so you know, yeah, we'll just help them to get up and running, and they'll take the ball from there.
Do you think that we're going to end up with a kind of, I don't really want to call it this, but a two-tier system where you've got the, if you like, the super teams like Team New Zealand and INEOS and Luna Rossa and American Magic, and then you've got the kind of second-tier teams which are coming in, buying a package from you? That's not to run them down at all, but, you know, are we on a level playing field here, do you think?
Yeah, look, we are, because a lot of the rule is very tight within this new design. There's not a massive amount of wriggle room. So even though it's an incredibly quick, high-performance boat, there's not a massive amount of scope within the design. There's a lot of finesse and a lot of detail. But I honestly think it is open for a new team to come along, put the time on the water, and understand the boat from a sailing perspective. And that's going to be a massive reward. So there's plenty of time for these new teams to get their boat, get on the water, and get comfortable with actually racing it around the course. And, you know, the gains you'll see there are bigger than what you'll probably gain by spending more time and money on the detail. So, no, it's very much a level playing field going forward.
And I know whenever I speak to anybody involved in the America's Cup, or indeed the Volvo Ocean Race or the Vendée Globe, when I ask them what they could do with more of, they always say time. Time is the most important commodity. So to tell us, how are you guys going to spend your time now over, say, the next 6 months?
Yeah, well, that's obviously, yeah, you're dead right. And it's about being efficient with that time. And not having too many crazy projects, you know, you got to be mindful that each decision you make does burn up time. So just trying to be really super efficient with the decision-making process. Obviously there's a huge amount ahead of us in finishing this boat, getting it in the water, getting it commissioned. As that evolves and changes and becomes clear, our scheduling will evolve as well. So, it's all about making smart decisions, really, and managing the restricted amount of time. It's a critical in any America's Cup campaign.
Well, Ray, I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. Really interesting conversation, and I hope everybody enjoys it. So thanks a million, and good luck with the defence of the Cup.
Oh, you're welcome, Justin. Look, anytime, mate.
Next up on the Yacht Racing Podcast, I talk to two young American sailors, Taylor Canfield and Mike Buckley, the founders of Stars and Stripes Team USA, the second American challenge for the America's Cup. I spoke to the pair shortly after the official announcement that their America's Cup entry had been accepted and began by congratulating them on that achievement and asking Mike Buckley how it felt to finally be challenging for the America's Cup.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. You know, it feels great now, but you know, we understand that the real work hasn't really even begun yet. So we're excited to get to work and build out our team and get out on the water.
And yeah. Mike, that being said, though, it's great to announce it to the world that, you know, we've entered and, you know, we'll be there in Auckland.
Well, that's right. And I know for both of you, this has been a very long process. And I have to give you some kudos for kind of keeping the whole communications thing under control, because it would have been very easy for this to have been a kind of heavily rumored thing that everybody was kind of talking about. And then there's always the chance it doesn't happen. But you guys, you know, there were some rumors squeaking around the industry, but you pretty much kept it under wraps until you were ready to announce. But it's been a long process, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I think what started as a dream of ours 20 months ago, you know, slowly, you know, came closer and closer to reality. We never gave up that we were gonna make it to the start of this thing. And it's a tough balance between letting the cat out of the bag and then at the same time telling enough people so you have a shot at fundraising and networking. And you know, but I think our team did a nice job kind of keeping it out of the press, but just enough to get the word out there. We've certainly been hard at work trying to make this dream into a reality.
And Mike and Taylor, what was it that kind of gave you the confidence to even begin this process? Because I mean, you know, lots of people would love to think they can put together an America's Cup campaign, but doing it is something completely different. What gave you that confidence?
Yeah, I think that anybody could do what we did. What we've done isn't isn't special. It's you know, we worked really hard at it. We had a dream. A lot of people have dreams, and we just weren't willing to take no for an answer. That's kind of how we're both wired. What started out as a kind of a small sailing goal turned into something much bigger, and we're kind of realizing that day by day. Hopefully by the end of this, Stars and Stripes Team USA will have inspired some people around the world, you know, win or lose. That's what this has really turned into. I think at the Congressional Cup last year, that was a pivotal point in our campaign, just getting some momentum on the fundraising side, getting a big win, you know, developing that winning culture with an all-American crew that Taylor put together, and just getting a little bit better every day and really, you know, believing in ourselves and our team. I think that was certainly, you know, a big part of our campaign. But we also understand that at the end of the day, that was one race that will have no bearing on who wins or loses, you know, the actual America's Cup.
For sure, you guys are already inspiring people. You just got to look at the social media comments that are flying around. People are really embracing this all-American approach, and I want to talk to you a bit more about that. But Taylor, perhaps you can tell us, you know, how far back do you guys go? Like, where did this relationship start between you and Mike?
Yeah, you know, Mike and I actually sailed together probably for the first time. I want to say 2011.
Didn't we agree to never sail again with each other again?
That was the case at one point, but we've come to better terms recently. And we've done two Congressional Cups together now, and it's, you know, we've competed against each other, you know, more so. We're actually teammates in many other classes that we sail in as well. We have, you know, we've shared a coach in the J70s and so on, but. You know, our relationships developed over the last couple of years, you know, And, you know, I consider him one of my best friends and, you know, one of the people I trust the most. So I think that's a really important dynamic moving forward, that, you know, you have someone that you can trust. And for me, that's, you know, a big part of what I need to do both on the water and off the water to make this thing happen.
I get the impression, and I may be completely wrong on this, that although both of you are pro sailors, that perhaps Mike looks after the business side of it a little bit more than Taylor. How's the dynamic? Where's the split?
Yeah, I think that, again, we're a startup and we all wear many hats. I enjoy the business side of it, and I enjoy the challenge of that. But Taylor, you know, is also quite business savvy. But I think that what was a pivotal point in our campaign is once we started to get a few people to believe in our vision, was to put some people in place that you know, are business and organizational experts, and that was a huge point for us, hiring a CEO and a COO. And that took some of the pressure off of us. It also really laid the foundation for our organization, because, you know, at the end of the day, you're building a brand and a company that has 70 or more employees. And so we're really lucky to have tremendous leadership in the executive level, and not to mention getting a fantastic designer in JB Braun, who's been in the America's Cup for 20 years. And our general counsel, Melinda Erklund, is an America's Cup legend on the legal side, with Artemis and Oracle. The organization is certainly much bigger than the two of us. You know, while we're actively involved in it, our main focus is how do we build a winning sailing team?
Yeah, you guys have really hired a pretty impressive lineup there. Taylor, I've got to ask you, when I first met you down in St. Thomas in the U.S. Virgin Islands, which is where you hail from, what's been the reaction to this announcement down there? They must be pretty stoked, are they, at the St. Thomas Yacht Club?
Oh, absolutely. I think we've had tremendous support from everywhere, to be honest, but it's great to have, you know, the support from the islands where, you know, I grew up and that's where my upbringing was. And, you know, it's a special place for me. And to, you know, for me, who I looked up to the most, you know, as a sailor growing up and going through, you know, through my ages was Peter Holmberg. And, you know, to see him go on and to become top match racer in the world and then go on to, you know, be a part of these America's Cup campaigns, you know, it's great. And I think that they have just like supported him, and I think they'll continue to support us. And, you know, it's such a small community down there that, you know, everyone's really excited that, you know, they can identify with, you know, this project and know that, you know, they'll be represented.
Now, you guys are going to be representing the Long Beach Yacht Club in California. Just tell me how that whole thing came about.
Yeah. Again, the big story with Long Beach Yacht Club is the Congressional Cup. You know, that's probably my favorite event in the world. You know, they do a tremendous job putting on this amazing event, and, you know, it's all member driven. So, you know, the community here really just digs deep and gets it done, and they put on a show and a spectacle for the rest of the world. And, you know, to us that really resonates, and, you know, and what we're trying to create and, you know, make this as inclusive as possible. And, you know, there's no better yacht club than Long Beach Yacht Club to, you know, open and welcome us all in for, you know, the Congressional Cup. And I think for this moving forward as well.
So that regatta win in the Congressional Cup, when you beat Dean Barker and Terry Hutchinson and the American Magic team, the other America's Cup, U.S. America's Cup team, that really was a very significant regatta for you guys.
Absolutely. You know, there's no doubt that was a, you know, like Mike said, a pivotal point in our campaign and our success. But you have to remember, this event's been going on for years now. And I think, you know, back to the subject, that Long Beach Yacht Club has been putting on this event, regardless of whether we show up or not. You know, it's amazing. So it's a good time, and everyone likes coming. You know, I think that's why you continue to see all the best matchers in the world show up to this event year after year.
And of course, that event was different to the others. I think it always remained in monoholes, even though we had that move into multiholes for the kind of wider World Match Racing Tour.
Yeah, it's a classic event. You know, I still think that there's no better match racing than, you know, the classic monohull match racing. You know, it's a very tactical game, and it definitely has a special place in my heart, and I love it. And you know, I would say that I don't think I can ever see this event dying, because they're older boats, but you know, they're racing spectacular. It's so close. You know, every inch matters, and you know, that's, I think, what a lot of sailors are striving for, to be a part of.
Now tell me, guys, how touch and go was this whole thing? When did you guys become confident that you were going to be able to get your submission in before the deadline? Because we saw that flurry of, I think, 8 challenges all arriving on the final deadline day.
Yeah, I think we were always confident that we were going to get there. You know, although it appeared that we, you know, submitted right at the deadline, we'd been in close communication with the defender and the challenger record for the last year. It certainly wasn't a last minute entry. We've been, you know, our boat's been under construction, and you know, our small design office here in the States has been, you know, hard at work. You know, we know we have a lot of work left to do to make sure that we're sailing in Auckland in 2021, with the best team and the best boat and the best people that we can possibly find, and we know that, you know, raising money is a huge part of that. So the fundraising will probably never stop, and I'm sure that most of the other teams are probably in similar shoes.
So how will you deal with that? Are you going to now kind of split your time? Are you guys going to focus on the sailing? Is somebody else going to do the fundraising? How are you planning to do that?
Well, I think as the founders of the team, we will always have our fingers on the pulse of the business operation, and you know, I really love that side of it, and so does Taylor. Getting out there and meeting, you know, supporters of our vision and this team and this movement. So I think we'll certainly be heavily involved in all aspects. But you know, we you know, at some stage there will certainly be a shift in focus to the sailing side.
You guys are pretty hot talent within the professional sailing world. Did you guys get offers in the interim period when you were trying to put this deal together? Did you get offers to go and sail with other teams?
I think there was some opportunity, but you know, we were really focused on our vision and our the movement that we believed needed to happen here in the U.S. to get American sailors back in the America's Cup, and try to get the America's Cup back to America. All along, that was our entire focus. How can we get an all-American team fighting to win the America's Cup? And there just wasn't another option out there like that, and that's what we loved.
And that, as I said earlier, that's really resonated. I mean, it was almost like a collective sigh of relief from the American sailing fans, because this is what you read all the time, is that, you know, there's no nationality in these teams and nobody can get excited or get behind a team. You know, when Oracle won it, there was kind of one or two American sailors involved in the whole thing. It's been really important.
I think that's why Americans love the Olympics. It's why a lot of these, you know, a lot of foreign company, or, sorry, foreign countries love the World Cup soccer. You know, it's this national pride. You know, there's nothing better than watching the Olympics. You know, like, you wouldn't turn on ice luge or gymnastics if it wasn't this national pride. But, you know, here in America, when that stuff's on in the Olympics, you know, you can't keep your butt in the seat. You know, you're cheering, you're going nuts, because, you know, that's your country, and we're all proud of that. So we thought it was a pretty nice tie-in, you know, our number one value is to be authentic. And I think that that's a big reason why we've seen the, you know, all the nice comments and on social media and things like that, which is incredibly humbling to us.
And to what extent are you going to take this All-American angle? I mean, is this going to be a completely All-American team, from the sailing team right through to the boat builders?
There is not a chance in this world that our sailing team will not be All-American.
and the rest of the team, the rest of the infrastructure around it?
Yeah, I mean, we are an All-American team, you know, our goal is to, you know, help bring up, you know, new American technologists, new American yacht designers, new American athletes, people that you've never heard of, boat builders, you know, you name it. We're making, you know, every possible effort to make that a reality.
Yeah, we're looking to make the country excited about it, you know, and it's bigger than just the two of us sitting here, you know, speaking with you. It's about, you know, bringing everyone in and trying to as inclusive as possible and get other Americans involved, because we've had this void for, you know, a few years now. So we're looking to put, you know, this country back on the map and in this sport.
And it really is an opportunity, isn't it? Not just with the America's Cup, but with American sailing generally. I mean, we've seen what Charlie Enright and Mark Towell have done with their Volvo Ocean Race entry, and, you know, they did fire up quite a lot of interest within the US, but it's still not a major thing. I think people do know about the America's Cup, so you guys have a real opportunity to get people excited. And are you finding that you're getting commercial organizations who want to kind of align with that message?
Yeah, you know, the outpouring of support that we've received post launch has just been unreal. We've got some major brands that are you know, interested in talking with us and working with us, and so yeah, we're really excited to kind of continue to explore what's out there, and hopefully we find a couple major sponsors that want to come on this journey with Stars and Stripes Team USA.
So I know you've worked really hard on this up until this point, but you alluded to it right at the beginning, Mike. You know, the hard work really starts now. What have you guys been doing since you launched about a week ago, and what's the timeline now? What happens next?
I think I spent however many hours in the last week. I think I've spent just about every hour of every day on the phone. You know, Taylor's been working hard, honing in his foiling skills, and we were out on the water together yesterday. Just again, building out our organization, because you can have the best sailors in the world, but you need to have an organization behind you to make sure that, we're there in 2021 with the right pieces in the right places.
And the right pieces would include the right sailors. And I know that you guys are close to making some sort of an announcement, maybe today, on how you're going to kind of staff out the or try out sailors for this. What thoughts have you got around that?
Yeah, there'll be our communications director will put out some information on how we're going to start our application process across the board for all positions, not just sailors. One of our other major values is inclusivity. We intend to really focus on building an inclusive team, we'll have some kind of an exciting way to announce that kind of right after the first of the year.
That sounds exciting. Inclusivity is a big word. We don't see many women involved in the America's Cup. Is this a team that we might see a female sailor?
I know for sure there's going to be some female sailors that are going to have an opportunity. That's for sure. I don't think any of us know. The neat thing about this America's Cup is that there's not one person in the world that has ever sailed an AC-75. I think as we all learn the positions on the boat, we're going to put the best people that we can possibly find in those positions. And it's certainly our hope that there's some females involved. You know, people from all walks of life again, an inclusive, authentic, all-American team. That's the name of the game at Stars and Stripes Team USA.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to all our guests, Will Harris from Hive Energy, Ray Davis from Emirates Team New Zealand, and Taylor Canfield and Mike Buckley from Stars and Stripes Team USA. Thanks everyone for taking the time to talk to me. My thanks also to you, our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. And if you did, feel free to tell your friends all about the Yacht Racing Podcast. I'll be back soon with another episode. But until then, thanks for listening and sail fast.